How do you take sailors with previously only an outside hope of getting to the Olympic Games and actually making sure that they qualify? Well, after a successful career as an Olympic sailor, including a bronze medal in the 49er at London 2012, Allan Nørregaard likes to take on tough coaching missions, and he's got a pretty good track record doing exactly that. But before we say hello to Allan, hi, I'm Andy Rice coming to you from the UK. And Hamish Wilcox, you're into another week of coaching with Luna Rossa Prada Pirelli in Barcelona. You've been bouncing around on a coach boat today. What kind of speeds were you doing out there on the water today?
It was a hideous day today. I've got a rip-roaring headache, and I feel like most of my fillings have ended up in the bottom of the chase boat. But no, the chase boat's capable of doing about just under 60 knots. But today we were definitely limited by the waves. I think the Sail GP's got a lot more to offer coaches, sitting in the booth or like I was last weekend, sitting at home. Anyway,
Well,
it's what
we
we
might
do.
come back to Sail GP ask you about what you saw from Halifax, Nova Scotia, because that seemed to be quite an eventful Sail GP, as so many Sail GPs are. But without further ado, let's say hello to our special guest coming to us from Denmark, Allan Nørregaard. Thanks for joining us on the call. How are you today?
Very good. Pleased to be here.
And tell us, what is keeping you busy in 2024? What's filling your calendar?
Well, I was quite busy with the Turkish NACPR team this winter, all the way up to the qualification here. And I'm still helping out a little bit on their program up towards the games. They managed to do the qualification, and that was kind of the main target for them. As I have been doing with other teams as well, as you mentioned, that's kind of been my specialty lately, is to get the people that have a small chance of qualifying to actually make it there.
Yeah, so I called it Mission Impossible. Obviously, you've proven that you can take sailors who maybe only have an outside chance of getting there and making sure that they do what's required. And I'm wondering, do you have certain criteria when you f have that first meeting and someone approaches you? What makes you decide whether to take on a project?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, for me, I like hard challenges. I like projects that are not easy, but good projects. So if I have people that I feel I work well together with, then I do give them a chance to suck a bit on what I've been doing with sailing and my knowledge around that and helping them from where they are. And yeah, I've been doing that a few times. First with the Finnish team of Sinem and then Janne. It was a long project that and then afterwards here with the I was working a bit with the Chinese NACRA team as well, and then also they managed to qualify. And then Uruguay 49er guys I was also working with and still working a little bit with them sometimes. Getting them up to speed, and yeah, it's been working out well for those teams, and I'm really happy with the progress I managed to make together with them.
I'm really interested in the Cinnamon Yana project, the team from Finland in the NACRA, because you'll tell the story much better than I would, but my understanding is that Janne, who's probably about my age, somewhere in his 50s,
Yeah, not quite, but
not quite.
he's getting up there. He was probably 20 years sitting in the office doing business work, and then he sold his business. And previously, he was doing a bit of match racing crewing, but never on a trapeze or in a dinghy at all. So it was a big challenge to get him back into shape and managed to get him up and actually being able to perform as a crew there to be able to qualify. So that was a long, big mission, but yeah, we managed it. And in the end, actually, he never got to go to the games because the Finnish Olympic Committee didn't pick him because he had a court case going against him at that time for drug dealing. which now he's out of and was all cleared from, because apparently he had some of his apartment or business building rented out to some guys that used it for drug storage, and he was convicted for being a part of that project there. So that took him away from actually getting to the games in the end. But he actually did qualify on in the regattas to go there. So that was a bit of a setback for that. So since that, he jumped out, and now we're sailing a little bit together on other boats for which doesn't have the federations involved to make potential decisions for him if he can go or not. So that was a bit of a funny project, but yeah, really nice guys to work with, and I'm still working with them. They're really good guys.
So how gutted was he to have qualified and then not actually get to go to Tokyo?
Yeah, I mean that was really bad. There was something he was working with full on for actually it ended up being 5 years because we had a year extra. So that was a big setback. But I mean, I think afterwards it was more the challenge that was the thing in it, that he wanted to prove to himself and that it was possible for someone in his situation to actually manage that and qualify. So I mean, for him it was a success to actually do that. And then in the end he didn't get the experience of the game, so but he managed to go and qualify, and that was the goal.
And I heard, and again, you can tell this better, but was his inspiration watching the NACRAs at Rio and seeing Santiago Lange, aged 54, I think he was, win the gold medal? Was that one of the inspirations?
Yes, definitely. He was one of the big inspiration for him to get into it. That's for sure.
Yeah. And so you got that team to a level where that was possible. I mean, I imagine that must be the biggest mission impossible you've taken on, but how did the others compare?
Yes. No, I mean, all of them were tough for them to qualify, and they all managed to. So I mean, I really enjoy these projects that are not easy, but you really have to get things together in the best way or in a really good way to have a chance to qualify. And until now, we succeeded with all of them. So we're really proud of that.
Now, I think you're familiar with the structure of Road to Gold, the 12 chapters, and the way that Hamish has laid that out. I'm interested to know how much that mirrors the approach that you take, and where the differences might lie in terms of what's the commonality in all these projects that you've taken on across various NACRA teams and the 49er teams that you've mentioned.
I mean, I haven't gone through all your program here, so I don't know exactly the whole situation. But I've dived in a little bit and listened to some of it, and I think it's a really good program you have here, and big inspiration that I really like to hear the rest of it, because I think there's a lot of good stuff that we can all learn from as coaches and as sailors. So I think that's a super super good product you guys have put together here. But I mean, from what I've heard here, is really we're really on the same kind of logical thinking into it. No, it's not rocket science sailing. It's a really complex sport that you need to consider a lot of things. And the main thing I think for me is prioritizations, really being able to spot where are the places that we can gain the most, and which ones are the important things, because it's really really easy for, especially for new teams and speed teams with not so much experience, to get sidetracked, get to work on things. There's a lot of hard workers out there, but you can very easily get to work down a route that is you can get some payback, but you might be able to get more payback in another area. So I think that's kind of where I do the main part of the help in the project is to keep people on the on track on which things to focus on which times. So I think that's the most important thing I can help with.
Hamish, this makes me think of your time when you went to work with the Japanese 470 squad and the things that they were excited about asking you about, and you came back at them with maybe some different priorities. Can you just remind us of how that went?
Yeah, well, I'm 100% behind Alan's. It's definitely the ethos of my coaching. It still is. I mean, looking back, that was early days for me in coaching, and as you say, that was a challenging project. The Japanese have a very unique sort of hierarchy as well that you have to deal with in terms of, ages as more status, and typically the helms had the higher age and automatically, were gifted this higher status, and so it was a battle in many ways. But in specifically, there was they were they watched videos. I was over there earlier with a coaching regatta and sailing with Dave Barnes, early days, and we were able to roll tack really nice, and they had lots of videos of it. And they were trying to, when I got there later on as a coach, they were trying to put together this perfect roll tack, and they were just working on it and working on it. And I mean, it was already 90%, but some parts of it might even been better than what me and Dave were doing. But really, like Alan said, it wasn't the priority. And getting them off that and stopping them from madly polishing that, that part of the bars, as we talked about, is a lot on Road to Gold. It's so easy to keep working on the things you're already good at, and ignore the things you know you're not good at because you don't like doing them.
And Alan, what are you finding when you take on these projects? Are there common themes where there's a common thread where typically people want to go down a certain road, and they want to obsess about one part of it, which might be important, but you might think that something else is more important?
I mean, I think people that work with me tend to maybe think that training can get a little bit boring sometimes because I keep coming back to speed, which is for most teams and most racing, that is the number one. So that is, I always have kind of the same structure in training, that we always start with the speed. If the speed is okay, then we can move on to the next things, which is down the list, and the next thing in line is usually the starting stuff, the area around there, because those two areas, if you can do good starts and have good speed, you're already doing really well in most kind of racing. And then after that, you kind of prioritize which other things are important on maneuvers and tactics. And I mean, as we said, it's a really, really complex sport, so there's a thousand things that we can work on. But the most important thing is to get the important things right. So always, for me, it's just keeping that focus on not getting ahead of yourself and start to work on fine-tuning roll tacks or whatever. If you're only on 60% in the certain conditions in speed, then it doesn't matter about that tack. So really, really always know about what is going to be deciding the race.
It sounds like you're putting speed a little bit ahead in terms of priority compared with Road to Gold, which kicks in chapters 4 and 5. So I'm thinking that in boats like the Nacra 17 and the 49er, both of which are really hard to handle correctly. How much do you balance speed versus being able to get the boat around the race course?
No, I mean, for sure, 49er in the beginning, you do a lot of swimming and you need to be able to get around the course without capsizing, and that's kind of your first level. But as it is now, I mean, it's like 470 sailing now. I say 49er racing, because everyone is up to so high level that it's really small details that is the deciding things in racing. So it reminds me a lot more about how 470 racing is now. Like, if we compare 49er racing to 15 years ago when we first started, yeah, then it was about keeping the mast up and getting around the course. But it's not like that anymore.
We had a question come in from Martin Latimer before the call. Martin, if you are on the call, it would be great to see if we can get you to ask the question directly. Let's see if you're around. Hello, Martin.
Yeah, it was just really about building consistency.
Can you just switch on your video? Are you there on video
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, sure, yeah. I'll just show how old I am and how long it's taken not to get my experience up. Yeah, I sail a D0 predominantly and also a fin. But what I find is I can find my speed and I can get my speed in certain conditions. It's trying to work on that consistency. And it's the tips for trying to develop your consistency more than anything else.
Where do you want to go with that, Alan? I mean, but well, we could talk about consistency of boat speed, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because there's an element of knowing how to change gears there, and also your equipment selection, maybe. But is it better to have good all round speed, even if your peak speed isn't as good? For example, maybe have an easier setup on the rig that is a bit more automatic. Any thoughts on that, Alan?
Yes, I mean, it depends a lot on what kind of level you're racing on, I guess. If you are racing on the highest level in Olympic sailing now, everyone is very similar speed. But still, there's always a few teams that have a little bit of an edge. And yeah, I mean, they just, those are usually the guys that put it in testing and know their. Like, they've been playing around with the testing, done their homework really well. So it's really not the one on the day, the regatta. It's, for me, it's really, it's one in the training up to, because you gotta do your homework of straight lining speed testing with other good teams around you to really know how to make the best of yourself and the boats that you're sailing. So, it really comes down to hours and quality hours of straight line testing to really be consistent, I would say.
Martin, do you ever get the chance to do any lineups against anybody else outside of a racing environment?
Yeah, I mean, we're at club and sort of open meeting levels, and yeah, I try to do it, but I think it's trying really to try to get that the understanding of what you're getting out of it. You know, you can spend a lot of time on the water, but I think it's about the best way to train for these things. Yeah, we do some boat for boat training rather than just always going out club racing, but probably not enough.
Yeah, and obviously time is always a limiting factor for us weekend warriors. Alan, have you got any thoughts about how to maximize the efficiency of that time?
No, I mean, it's a very different thing, I guess, if you're a weekend warrior and then don't have your coach boat behind you to really make comparisons on sail shapes and other different things around you. So it's a longer process if you don't have that. So it's more about trusting each other that, okay, I try with these things, and then you see if that works better or not. And the other thing, try on the other team, try another thing, and yeah. For me, it's always been about good training groups. To if you want to be getting good, you want to have a good training group. And from what I understand from your program, that's also one of your key things. And from my experience, that is that's also really really what makes the difference in the end, is if you have a good training group around you, you can really speed up the process of getting better.
Martin, do you have anyone you can trust sufficiently to share all knowledge and intel between each other?
Yeah, we do. Actually, as a fleet, we're trying to, what we're saying is we've got about 13, 14 D0s at the club. And what we're trying to do is bring everybody up to standard. So rather than trying to hide what you know, and we've got one particularly good guy, but I think it's trying to say, are there particular set pieces, if you like, that really develop up that consistency better to demonstrate what people do? I mean, we can take a rib out and follow and make our own observations on sail shapes and things. But it's just really tips on developing up your. As I say, I think we can get speed. Most of us can find speed in the boat, but it's getting that consistency and speed. And you've just said it, and we know the answer is time in the boat. And that's, I think, the hard thing when you're trying to train for between working, isn't it?
I think one of the things that the best sailors seem to be very good at is knowing when to shift gear, recognizing when the rig or other settings need changing through changes in the breeze. So Hamish or Alan, we'll start with Alan, but what are your thoughts about boat speed in static conditions is one thing, but boat speed when you're going through very changeable conditions, how do you train your sailors to get better at that?
I mean, it is always the focus because it's really rare to have stable conditions. So we're nearly always sailing in something with changes. So a lot of the focus is on how to handle the changes, both up and down or waves that are different. And then in the end, it comes down to a lot of evaluations after in the debriefs, where we have some videos and I can really analyze things well to see which things works and which things doesn't work so well, and trying to deal with it back next time we meet similar conditions.
At least the speed that you're sailing your boats, Martin, a coach would be able to keep up in a coach boat, whereas Hamish is losing his fillings trying to do this. So I'm also interested, Hamish, in data. I mean, when boats are going as fast as they are, observation by eye must be very difficult, and data must get increasingly important, does it, at those speeds?
Oh, for sure. But I'm just thinking of a good question from my perspective, Alan, is just how you manage your debrief. So you've got, as you say, reaching conclusions, which is great, and facilitating some really good discussions around that. Do you then record do you get the guys to write some notes, or how do you actually manage the collection of data so that next time you see those conditions again, you can start there rather than starting relearning the same lessons again?
I've kept some notes post sailing, but I don't think we probably do enough of that. And I think that's probably the focus on the group, isn't it? Is to try and record what we do. So,
Yeah,
okay.
and I was also
Our
a question
takeaway
for
is to spend more time and be more logical, probably.
Yeah. And also a question for Alan, actually, because he's, obviously we just got to that point where he had come off the water and he had his, NACRA team there chatting. How do you actually capture the conclusions, Alan?
For me, of course, it depends a lot on how much time you have available. But now, when we're working with professional athletes, and we do have enough time, where we're actually more limited on sailing time, what the body can handle. So we do use a lot of time on doing briefings with video and analyzing to get to learn more, because we might be able to just put in 3 hours in a day and really to keep that running. But we're always under time pressure because we need to speed up compared to the fleet in catching up. So we do quite a lot on analyzing, and sometimes I do the analyzing myself, and sometimes we do it together in the full team and watch the videos, and sometimes I pick out some that I think we should have a look at, and sometimes we just run through it kind of the whole day, and look at just stop at the points where we think it's relevant to really look more into it. But usually we come out in the end of the day with some conclusions, and then we try to write that down in the book and say today, okay, we had these three things that was really key things today that we learned, and we have another three or five things that next time we come out in these conditions, we want to check these things because those are still our question marks. So I'm trying to always keep a book of things to test because sometimes it's not the next day you meet similar conditions. It might be in a month or in a month and a half before you get similar conditions, and then it's nice to be able to open your book and see what's in it from last time I had these conditions to really see what our question marks was from that day and those conditions to really be straight into it and run the right test on the day.
Perfect answer.
Martin.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much for that. And Martin, thanks for a great question. And if you've got any more, then please do come back in. But I'm going to go to Matilda and see if Matilda is around to ask a question related to laser and Ilka speed. So let's see if you're there. How's that?
Hello.
Hi,
Hello,
Matilda.
everyone. Hello. Nice to meet you all. I'm traveling actually. I have a question for you. I'm a laser Ilka 6 sailor, and I wanted to ask you how much do you rate the speed important on my class rather than other classes that you talk about? And
Did you
then
catch? Sorry, yeah, Matilda, it's not coming through super clear, but I'm just going to check, Alan. Did you hear that question? Okay.
Yeah, it was a bit hard to hear.
So it's I'll just repeat it. How much importance would you rate working on the speed on a laser Ilka rather than, compared with other classes? And when you refer to speed, do you mean average VMG per leg or what? So slow boats compared with fast boats, and also what do we mean by boat speed?
Yeah, I mean I'm not a specialist in slow boats at all. I'm really specialized in the more faster boats. Well, nowadays 49er is not really a fast boat anymore, but more. I never raced lasers, so I would not be the right person to really ask questions there. But just from basics, racing is still really you always see the fast people winning in the end of the day after a full week of racing. So yeah, I would suggest it's still the same game.
Yeah, Hamish, 470 sometimes is a fast boat and sometimes it's a slow boat, and you've got lots of experience in the 470. Well, what feedback would you have for Matilda on boat speed?
Yeah, I guess it's really interesting when you do your we often at all these Olympic venues over the years, we'll always do our coaches kind of capture to sort of get the feeling of what the different courses have been doing on the day, and we can all start to build a better picture of how the wind behaved. And I always laugh to myself because you could have the lasers on the same course as the 49ers or the NACRA or a faster boat or the 470 sometimes and completely different outcome. So the laser coach would always say, what happened today? Oh, we just tacked on the shifts. And the 470 or the NACRA or the 49er would say it was all about the pressure on the left, So I think the difference between the slow boats and the fast boats is that the wind speed makes a bigger difference because it could make a bigger contribution to your speed. Later, gets another 3 knots and it doesn't really matter as much as the shift. Whereas NACRA gets another 3 knots of wind speed and it makes a big difference, a bigger difference than the shift. So it's a matter of working out, where what's the, in the laser, what the priorities will be. Still the speed is obviously important, but you'll find you need to focus more on being on the lifted tack than perhaps a fast boat, which is focused more on where the wind speed is.
Yeah, very useful. Matilda, anything that you want to follow up on? Because there's a few elements to your question, but yeah, do you want to take it any further in any direction?
Yes, thanks. I would have another question, and I would ask how much can you push training in particular condition without losing the ability in the opposite condition? Like, how much could you balance light wind condition or strong wind condition not to, like, to be strong in both?
Right, let's start with you, Alan.
Yes, I mean you probably always have some conditions which you are stronger in than others. So for me, it's always been about being on race racing ability in all conditions. So we always try to work on kind of the weakest things to make sure that we are up to speed in all conditions. So if we do really feel comfortable in some conditions, we try to focus on the others to really get all round good. So yes, it depends a lot on what conditions you're expecting for where you have your next important race, and trying to make sure that you're good in the expected conditions, I would say. Yeah.
One thing that seems to have happened in the 49er, especially with the new Black North sails, is the weights seem to be going up. And I mean, the weights are probably 20 kilos higher than they were back when you were racing the 49er. And yet the rig size hasn't actually changed that much. I'm sort of surprised by that, in that I always thought that as people got more competent with sailing the boat, they learned how to handle the boat in strong winds at a lighter crew weight. But it seems like the priority is going towards the heavier weight, and you sort of live with the lighter conditions in the sub trapezing conditions. What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, it's funny thing, the weight. It's a very fleet decided thing. It can go up and down in over the years without the boat changing. And even now the sails, okay, they might be a little bit deeper, and that might put the weight up a little bit. But it can also be that you have most of the teams down in another range, and then it just doesn't pay to be that much heavier than the fleet, because then you suffer too bad when it's light wind. So sometimes when you get really good, you want to stay pretty close to the fleet to be able to get all round. And then if you think that the fleet is generally under the optimum weight for the boat and the conditions, the race place, if you want to stay maybe a little bit above it, but you can never really afford to be far away if you are good. You can afford to be far away when you're new and upcoming, and you can play a little bit on luck sometimes if you have a regatta that is light wind, and then you actually have a chance to make a good result. If it's light wind and if it's breezy, okay, you're out anyway. But when you really get to the top level, you cannot really afford to be much away from the fleet.
And Hamish, I'm wondering, when Pete Burling and Blair Tuke got in, Pete was probably much bigger than a typical helm in the 49er at that time. And how much were they trying to match the rest of the fleet, and how much do you think they actually dragged the trends of the fleet in their direction in terms of crew weight?
Yeah, I think over time, there's 100, you're 100% correct. Over time, the 49er crew weights have grown massively, especially when you go back to Qingdao, when they were 470, you know, 470 crew weights. And as Alan said, probably well under optimum weight, you know, for the class. I think, well, with Pete, you know, he's a good sized guy, and I think there's a minimum which was unhealthy for him to be at, and I think the fleet has slowly, definitely, over the, you know, the 11, you know, whatever it was, 9 years that well, longer than that even, that he was they were involved as a team, have come to realize that the sort of the weight was too light for the boat, probably. You know, there's a, you know, the boat starts to reward a you know, starts to reach max power in 7.5, 8 knots, and then you're sort of winning upwind and downwind after that if you're heavier to a point. So I think they sort of paved the way a little bit towards a more correct weight for the type of boat the 49er is.
Mm, okay. And Matilda, I know it's not just about weight, but that's what I've focused on. But is there anything more you want to discuss about the sort of the compromise of being good in all conditions?
No, thank you. It was really nice to listen to your answers.
All right. Well, thank you for your question. And I understand that the crew weights have gone up in the Ilka, maybe because of the carbon sections that are being used in the mast. So I think back to the poor Finn sailors when the Finn got thrown out of the games and they were worried there was no room for Finn sailors to go. I'd say Finn sailors, of people of their size, have got so much choice these days, Ellen, haven't they? I mean, pretty much anything that's foiling needs a bit of weight holding it down.
Exactly. We don't really have many classes left for the really light guys now. They were complaining when the fin went out that there would be nothing for the heavy guys anymore. But as it looks right now, it's they have plenty of places to play around there.
And just so we know, I mean, I'm going to keep on going with my questions and hope that other people like Martin and Matilda will come in with theirs, because I'd much rather hear from you rather than me and Hamish dominate the conversation. So please do use the opportunity like Martin and Matilda have. But Alan, in the NACRA, I'm interested. It seems like the crew weights are relatively light there, and is that because you've got that differential rudder? You can basically create extra righting moment with the pull down of the windward rudder.
Yes, for sure that helps a lot. But I mean, yes, the weights right now is maybe between 135 and 145 for most of the fleet. And if you're in a heavy end, you go a lot faster when you're foiling, and but you also pay a really big price when you're not foiling or marginal foiling. So it's super weight sensitive, the boat, because especially in marginal foiling, the light teams have a really big advantage, and as soon as it's easy foiling, yes, the heavy team have a really big advantage. So it is a place where you really need to be precise with your weight. But I mean, also people are getting better and better at handling it. So I think the weight actually came down a little bit again over the last year here. It was more towards 145 last year, and now I think average is around 140 again. So the trend is for a little drop back.
And what about your guys that have qualified from Turkey? In a sense, they've already won their Olympics just by getting that spot in the last chance regatta. But what's the focus now for them between the end of the last chance regatta at the end of April to the games in July?
No, I mean, there is not that much more to do actually, and time is kind of ran out already. So it's just about staying sharp on racing for them, and for them, it's about going and enjoying the being at the games. It's not the first time for Alijan, because he was in the Finn a couple of times. So he have and Besta also been around in the 470. So it's not like it's new, but for them in this class, it's new. And they're not on level to be in the fight for medals, or like even top 10 is going to be really, really hard for them, because there is a lot of good teams that so for them, for now, it's really about going there and get the best experience they can, and get ready for whatever project comes up afterwards after this. So that's really the game, and the main part of this campaign is done. That was about qualifying and making sure that they set them up well for new projects afterwards.
And Alichan, as far as I can think, is the only Finn sailor from the last games that has actually qualified for these Olympics. There's a few that tried in the Ilka 7, and I don't know if there were any in the 49 or other classes, but as far as I can think, Alichan's the only one that's made that transition. He had to go through a lot of weight loss, didn't he, from being a fin sailor?
Big, really big. He's down to 82 now, so I guess he was around 100 last time, just under. But yeah, it was a big thing, and also not trapezing or in a double-handed boat before, so it was a big, really big step for him, and he'd done a huge learning curve on that. So for both of them, it's been a really, really steep learning curve, and a good fun project to be part of.
And for someone coming from the slower boats with a different set of skills, like Alichan, what were the biggest learnings for him in terms of sailing a fast boat like the NACRA?
I think the whole thing of actually understanding apparent wind sailing when you come from a fin is something that takes a while. I would say it's really good to sail some kind of if you do a bit of mud sailing or something, to really have a good understanding of this and have a good feel for it. And the other thing is foiling, and Accra is a really tough boat to sail fast. It requires a lot of attention all the time. So you spend 98% of your energy on just sailing the boat, and then you have 2% to look out of the boat, and yeah, that's the fun thing with the boat, that it is tough boat to sail if you want to sail it fast, but also really rewarding when you're doing it. So, but it is something that, I mean, everyone is on this level now. But I'm sure if we see the boat now in the next campaign, everyone will be a lot higher level. The Italians has managed to stay a year ahead this whole campaign, and no one really managed to catch them up. There's a few teams that are getting close, but still they managed to stay a little bit ahead. It's not far away. It's like everyone is catching up quite fast, but it's like everyone is half a year behind, it looks like. So when you see them from half a year ago, you see that's where the fleet is now. But they've done a really impressive job on keeping the learning curve up as well, and staying ahead.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. You would have thought that gap over time would gradually squeeze, and you're saying that maybe it has, but they still seem to have found some extra gears just as people were catching up. Ruggero Tita and Caterina Banti, they seem to have stretched away again, and they seem to have filled in any weakness that they had in subfoiling conditions as well. Any clues as to how?
Yes, exactly. They were really dominating in all foiling conditions before, and were struggling a little bit in the light stuff. But the last Worlds we had here, they were actually doing really good in the light wind as well. So they're also filling in their weak spots now. So I would say half a year ago, I was going to put them a little bit on. If we had foiling conditions, for sure they will win. And if it was light wind, probably the British were gonna win. But as it looks now, they're gonna be hard to beat for anyone. So yes, it's if anyone managed that, it's they done impressively well, because they are ahead right now for sure.
When we were talking to Martin earlier, we were talking about the power of sharing knowledge and information, but it seems like in the NACRA 17 currently, it's an information war, isn't it? I mean, I get the sense that people play their cards pretty close to their chest, and when they find a gain, they don't tend to share it any further than they have to.
No, I'm not really sure how, because there's a few different training groups around in the top of the fleet, where the Italians have done really well on having a big group and managed to train together, and it looks like that's really been paying off for them. And there's a few other groups that's been training together and also done really good progress. But as it is now, for sure the Italians looks like they've done the best, and Ganga, their coach, have done a really good job on keeping them together. I know it's super tough, because we were in the same situation with the 49er, where we had in Denmark at the time where I was sailing, we had four or five teams that could actually do top 10 in the world. So it was really hard to have them same time as training partners, but also in a competition to actually get this spot for the games. So I know how hard it is for a group to stay together and work well together in that situation. So I'm impressed how well they managed that.
We've got about just under 15 minutes left. I think we've got some questions coming in. So this is great. Perfect. Let's bring some of these up. So Ricardo, let's see if we can get. Oh no, he can't talk now. So he's just saying, what do you believe was the area where Tita and Banti prioritised to get their speed edge? I don't know. Where do you start with that? Is there anything particularly you would identify there?
No, I mean, I think they've done really well over the last 4 years, and even before that with the solid the winter trainings they did in Cagliari, and keeping the group together, of always having three or four good Italian teams, and then sometimes inviting a few other teams in to train with it, and they managed to do that really well.
Great, thank you. Thanks for your question, Ricardo. Pablo, let's see if we can get your get you in to ask your question about tackling a speed problem.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, Pablo.
So my question is what I posted. Like, when you're tackling some speed problem, you can see the obvious. For example, you're missing angle. Where do you focus, or how do you choose? What's your thought process when you're seeing you're missing something?
Ooh, that's a tough one, because there is 100 different things. So I would say I would have to look at the specific situation, the conditions to really answer that question, to give you a good idea of which way to work in.
Well, Pablo, let's have this conversation now. So throw a real world situation at Alan. What are you struggling with? Or think about something you've struggled with in the past and have that conversation with Alan now.
Yeah. So I don't know. For example, in strong wind, in the 470, we were missing speed, and later translated to angle also. So we had a worse VMG completely. And we didn't know if to focus on trim or equipment or technique. And there's so many variables that it was quite hard to like just select one or train on one. How do you work on it? Like one thing at a time, or you value the whole package? Like, what's your thought process both on the rib and after on short?
Yes, no, I think that's good. I mean, for me, always, if I see differences in speed in the fleet, I would always look at the fast people in the fleet and see how do they look, how do their sail shape look, do they do anything special in technique wise of sailing, any differences between them and you would be the first way to go. Of course, if you have someone really experienced sitting in a rib or in the boat with you that can tell you straight away what works, that's a fast way of doing it. But otherwise, my way of doing it is usually compared to whoever is the fastest and then take it from there.
Okay.
Hamish, this is right in your wheelhouse, three-time world champion. The thing that crosses my mind is, did you and Dave Barnes ever swap out helm or crew with other Kiwi sailors in the same squad? And was that a faster way of learning, swapping people in and out of boats?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fast way of learning. And yeah, we did a lot of that. And, you know, also just switching around, we did a lot of that as well, you know. So Dave could helm, I could crew or helm, and I could crew helm. And that sometimes accelerates, and that's certainly what Pete and Blair did, you know, massively. You know, there wasn't many days where Blair didn't sail the boat, you know, from the ramp out to the race area or training area and back in again afterwards. And that's actually the hardest part of a 49er, is getting it off the beach. So, you know, there's a lot of merit in that. But I think that I would probably go for balance, you know, in a 470. I think you know, that you should feel a certain amount of weather helm, and you can have too much or too little. Obviously, if you've got a height, if you've got a slow problem, then you probably got too much weather helm. And I bet if you've got any training partners that are fast, and the boat's going like you want your boat to go, if you were to swap boats with them, you might find that they've got a lot less weather helm. So the boat will be more balanced, and that's what it's encouraging, the speed. So yeah, I would definitely have a think about that, or if you can't swap boats, at least talk to them about it. You know, if you let the helm go, you know, how fast is the boat going to tack? Obviously, you want to give some warning to your crew, but you know, that's a sort of measure of sorts. And yeah, and I was thinking too, completely going back to the other question to finish off on training squads and the Italians and so on, it's important to remember the venue you go and train at makes a big difference to where your outcome's going to be. And Calgary, you know, it offers a lot of variety. You know, you get some good flat water, Mistral, a lot of Mistral flat water events. You get lots of sort of big choppy sea breeze events and everything in between. And I think, you know, you've got to put a good training squad together. But you also need a good venue, and if you've got a sort of mono-dimensional venue, you probably need to mix it up a bit in order to get across all the conditions. And Or you just prioritize, you know, as Alan was saying, if you really feel weak in the light, then, you know, the strong wind days, you might want to go to the gym or, you know, do something else and prioritize the days of the week that are in the zone that you want to improve in.
Pablo, great question. Any follow-ups on that? Any further response to what these guys have said?
No, I think it's quite good, the response of switching boats if possible, because it helps you to see if you have to blame the team or the boat to see what's like. I think that also gives two paths that are quick to answer.
Perfect. Nice. Well, Pablo, thank you so much. It's a really, really nice question and great responses we've just had. And now, Jess, we've got a question from Jess about the mental side of things. Jess, are you there to ask your question to Alan?
Yep, I'm here. I had a question about the mental side of things. Obviously, I think because Alan, you said that you would pick, you'd help really challenging teams. So my question was, did you help on the mental side of things, or was that kind of not your theme and you'd really put on all of the technical effort?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. No, for sure, that's part of the package. So some people, it comes really natural and they click together, and then that's an easy way of working together. And other teams have more challenges. And this is a key area for, especially for people that spend a lot of time together and are trying to peak at a certain time. For sure, it's a big area as well, and usually we're at our level of the sport lucky to be working with other good people, with psychologists that can really help us in this area. So, I mean, I know the basics about it, and trying to help people stay in a good state of mind to learn the quickest, and that is a really important part of the game. So yes, for sure, it's something to keep working on as well, to get better as well as speed. Even though in my book maybe speed comes before the mental side, but it comes down the list. So it's together with many other things.
Jess, have you got any specific questions? Any particular day or regatta or anything where you've struggled with the mental side of things, and anything we can dig into anecdotally?
I wouldn't say that I've got a key moment, but just when pressure pretty much comes on and you're a bit in the, you know, the team is really under pressure, and sometimes you get a bad race, and how what would be the one thing that you'd kind of try and bounce off of, being okay we've had this bad race, but now basically snap out of it and get back on track? How would you pretty much help a team do that?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important thing as a coach you can do, is to really keep the positive, constructive mind going in people, so that you can do the blame game later on shore. But if you're in between races and then you need to switch into a race straight away, for sure it's about keeping the focus forward. And if it's something that can be solved straight away, yes, I might take it up. But if it's something that needs time to think about, and we don't have that kind of time at the moment, it's really about making sure that the focus goes into the next race, and see which are the important things there. And then, of course, when you come back in, then you can take it up and work on those things. But it's really about doing it in the right time, I think.
Jess, any further question on that?
No, I think it's all good.
Thank you. Great question. And I also wonder, you've worked with Alan with a lot of different nationalities. Do you see a difference in mentality naturally between, say, someone from Uruguay or Finland or China? And if so, are there any sort of national characteristics that we can all learn from?
No, there's huge differences. You have the Latinos from South America, which are really they get super super frustrated and very loud inside in the boat, and that was a big challenge for them, which I think they've done a good improvement on this year as well to handle that and stay constructive and a little bit more calm in the boat when they have to. And the other way for some of the Finnish, which are really really calm, and sometimes you need to get them to talk a little bit more. And on the other side of the world, when I'm working with Chinese people, it's a totally different things where they're not really brought up with thinking too much themselves, more into getting told what to do and have playbooks and know exactly what to do and trying to get them to soften up sometimes and base things on feelings sometimes can be challenges. So every team have their different challenges and strengths and weaknesses, I would say.
Yeah, that sounds like it's a very broad range, and yet you're managing to get success with all of them. And I've been so impressed with the Uruguayan 49er team this year, winning the Europe, well, taking the European title out from under the noses of all the European
very
teams.
Impressive. Yes.
That's amazing. And with the Chinese and being brought up in a culture where you say they don't really learn how to think for themselves. They've still, the Chinese, I've been massively impressed as a sailing nation, have really come on leaps and bounds in the last 10 or 20 years. So that suggests that working by playbook actually can take you quite a long way, even at Olympic level.
Yes, for sure. You can manage things in many ways and make it work. And they might have other advantages in numbers and fleet sizes, and they had a lot of people to take there. So I'm sure we will see a lot more of them in the future.
Now, Alan, we're just about on time. We've had some great questions this evening. So thank you very much to everyone there. I just quickly want to ask you about tower trapezing. So London 2012, you win an Olympic bronze medal, and then you go and do the European Championships in Lake Garda just a few weeks later, and there you are standing on the shoulders of your crew, and you've got this extra, what, a couple of knots of boat speed upwind or whatever, how much was it? And but why didn't you bring that
enough
up for the
yes.
games? Why weren't you using that at the games?
Yeah, that was the biggest mistake of my career for sure. Not using it there, but no, it was actually we didn't know that it was that good. We tested it first in I think back in 2004 in Lake Garda with the old rig and didn't really make it to work much better than anything else. And with so the combination of being light and with more riding moment was really the key. So it was a bit of a coincidence coming with a new crew there being too light and not really having any chance of making any good result because we were just too slow. So we had to do something. So it was a bit of a fun thing just trying it out on the way out to the race course and seeing, okay, yeah, this might actually work, and just playing for fun with it in the racing. And we could choose being 5 degrees higher and same speed or same heading and 1.5 knot faster or something like this. So it was a very easy one.
Wow. Well, it must have been a lot of fun.
It was really fun,
I'm assuming the rules on 49er sailing changed soon after that. Otherwise, we'd be seeing other people doing
exactly.
it. And Hamish, I don't know if you were one of the pioneers, but didn't something happen similar in the 470 back in the 1980s?
Yeah, that was us. Yeah, I used to stand on Dave's back, grab the spinnaker sheet. Hopefully it was cleated. and hang out on him. And he was a tough little rooster. I don't think he could have jumped on any helmsman's shoulders and they would have stayed there.
Or you get the crew sitting in your lap. The helm sitting in the crew's lap.
There we got Richard Parsler, another great 470 sailor, offering his alternative take on this. We're going to have to do a whole session.
I don't know if it's great, but it's great fun. I mean, it is faster. Obviously, you've got more leverage.
Yeah,
exactly.
But the thing is, in the 470s, they had a rule that only one person could be supported by the wire, and that person had to have his feet in contact with the boat at all times. So
yeah.
I mean, people did try to do it. Who were those Italians who actually did it, Hamish? Championship. I don't even know if you
remember. I remember it came up again, and there was also the big shoes from that American crew. You know, the platform shoes.
Yeah, all kind of good solutions.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, we're opening up a whole can of worms here. We're going to have to do a Road to Gold special on this.
Yeah.
Alan, you're obviously a great pioneer and very able to take on very different missions. So congratulations on that. Any idea what you'll be doing beyond Marseille? Have you got quite a few projects in line for the rest of the year and for next year?
Yes, I mean, I'm actually working at the moment on another project, which is trying to close the gap a little bit between the just under the CLGP and the America's Cup and AC40s. There's a bit of a big gap down towards the next boat, which is something like ETF 26 and then 69F, which we did a little bit of sailing on the last couple of years, and then trying to get a project going to get a class up and running with a new boat that is a little bit more suitable for that area and a bit closer to the AC40s, so and CLGP. So we're talking to the designers at the moment to try to develop a boat that fits that for the youth and for the women's and potentially also training boats for CLGP teams. So could at the moment we're looking at a little bit scale down of the F50 like an F30 which. With the two double cockpit on each side and up to date foiling boat, so that's a project that I'm working on at the moment and hoping to get that going.
So, are you talking about a monohull in the same kind of configuration as an AC40 or 75?
No, actually, it's a bit of a combination. Now we're looking at between the AC40s and the F50s, which is catamarans, but with the fold down T-foils on the outside. So, so you're getting the riding moment as they have, and just the sitting inside to get the windage down, because that's really the key on these fast boats now, and also just to make a really good training boat, because at the moment we don't really it's a bit of a mission and a bit expensive nowadays to if you want to do AC40s or A50 you're looking at big budgets, so we're trying to make something that fits in a bit lower budgets, which is it's kind of a motorsports Formula 2 or 3 or something that we're trying to create in sailing here. I think sailing world really needs that at the moment. That's what I'm working on right now.
Have you got a working title for that project?
Well, at the moment we're just calling the sailing Formula 2 project, but it's very on the drawing board at the moment. We're talking to working with Gonzalo, the designer of the Alinghi, and also talked a little bit to the New Zealand guys, to Dan down there, to see if they were willing to come with a bid for this boat, and they're also keen to be in on it. So we at the moment we're just trying to get it going with some of the best guys in the fleet right now, so hopefully within a year or two we'll be able to get something out to play with there.
Great. Well, you've obviously got a lot going on, and Alan, we could have gone on a lot longer, but we've already taken you past the hour, so thank you so much for sharing everything about Mission Impossible and everything you've done with so many successful teams over the last number of years. So have a great rest of 2024. Thank you for all the questions we've had this evening. Really, really great stuff that we've had through from Martin Latimer onwards. So thank you very much to you. And we will come back to you next week. It's probably going to be a midweeker next week because I'm be on my way back from the Musto Skiff Nationals, which I'm doing up in Yorkshire. So it probably be more like in the middle of the week. So join us for our expert Q&A next week. Have a great week, everyone. Thank you, Hamish. Thank you again, Alan, and see you all soon.
Thanks, Al. Cheers.
Thank you.